With the Gold Line specifically, some of our project goals to start with this project is to really connect the cities in the North County. So looking at Everett, Marysville, and Arlington, providing them with a high frequency, high capacity transit system that they don't currently have. We're also looking to support growth in this North County section. So for Everett, we're seeing growth of about 57% over the next two decades, 41% in Marysville, and 74% in Arlington. So there's a lot of growth that's expected in this north section of the county that we currently is a gap in our SWIFT network. But a part of that, the effort of supporting growth is making sure that we're giving people access to the opportunities that come with that growth. So we have two regional growth centers along this corridor, the Cascade Industrial Centers in the north in Arlington, which is a manufacturing and warehouse hub for the North County and one of our burgeoning growth centers. And in the south, we have the Everett Downtown Regional Growth Center, which is already an economic engine for the county. And we want to make sure that that young people are able to get to and from these different work sites, and we're ensuring that we're connecting places in between as well. So like Everett High School, the Marysville Pilchuck High School, and the Wazoo Extension and Everett Community College, making sure that those workforce development pieces are coming together and allowing people to go from where they learn to where they work to recreation opportunities and everything in between. The other piece that we're trying to do with this project is manage growth for the county, because there is so much growth happening in the North County. That comes with a lot of challenges on creating strain on transportation resources, roadway infrastructure. You can attempt to try to build your way out of it. That comes with a lot of challenges, community impacts. But we feel that providing a compelling alternative to driving is the best alternative to reducing the community impacts that come with growth. And a part of that is, making a compelling alternative, as Rick alluded to, is in our view, is putting in center running lanes and having a more robust transit system than what we've had before. So our previous SWIFT lines don't have that kind of framework around them. They don't have center running lanes. So
what do you mean by center running lanes? So on the roads, the buses are in the middle?
The buses are in the middle, yeah. So they are not mixing with cars in that case. Ah. And as a result, they're able to get a strong amount of reliability, of long-term reliability, that builds a level of resilience that we don't otherwise get. If there's higher levels of traffic congestion, if we're in the traffic lanes, we're getting that same traffic congestion. And to make a compelling alternative, that means it being a better or equivalent or better option than driving. And so that's what we're trying to achieve here. The reality of making a paradigm shift like this is that it requires education and engagement with our communities to make sure that they understand what we're trying to do and why we're trying to do it. That has been a process over the past several years. We've completed two community engagement phases so far, robust community engagement with a large amount of touch points with the public to help them understand what we're trying to achieve with the Gold Line.
You're doing that like in community meetings, inviting the public in, telling what you're doing?
Yeah, we're going out to where people are. We're going to festivals. We're going to the public libraries. We have a lot of basically like pop-up events for people to come and interact with us, as well as having like a webinar that people can plug into and view, because we record it and it's available on our website through an online open house. So trying to get people multiple opportunities to be able to engage with us. So far we've sorted out through this engagement process the alignment. So that's what we see here today. We've sorted out the stations, where the stations are, and we've introduced the center running lanes. Our next engagement phase is expected to really focus on those center running lanes and start to parse out the benefits and costs of those center running lanes.
So does that mean will people object because they lose some lanes on the roads, or
They won't lose general purpose lanes. That's something that we've intended to keep no matter what. So in order to maintain traffic, because that is, we're trying to keep in mind all users of the roadway. There's a two-way left turn lane that would go away as part of this, so like a left turn lane that is often being removed by other agencies as a result of like safety improvements. So we see this as, instead of putting in a median, a hard median, we're putting in a bus to break up the lanes and being able to use that space to provide a benefit to the community that's more than just safety. Safety is one of those pieces, but it's not the only piece. We have two more, we have those two additional engagement phases to really tackle the center running lanes, and then to cover the locally preferred alternative that we want to bring forward and then eventually get approved by our board to then carry forward into the CIG process, the capital investment grant process.
And I just have to pause here and bottom line a little bit here. We need to persuade the city of Everett and the city of Marysville to embrace this concept. And that's a big lift because it's unusual, right? It's different than what they're used to.
So have you presented to them so far?
We have technical working groups that are stood up and working through, and they're waiting for us to deliver the conceptual design, which is our next set of deliverables. So the conversation's ongoing, and we've taken the burden of proof to show them that we can make this work without adversely affecting traffic or safety. In fact, that we think we can improve the safety characteristics of the corridor. So those darker blue areas up on the map are the places we're looking at the center running configuration. So right in downtown Everett and North Broadway and right in downtown Marysville.
So right here.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the colleges are right there. Providence is right there.
So currently where we're at with the project is we've initiated preliminary design for the effort, and we're getting ready to initiate the environmental review process later this year. That will progress as we're working with the jurisdictions and working through what alternative we want to carry forward. You can see those two engagement phases that I mentioned earlier with the LPA approvals. We're anticipating to enter to submit for a project rating in the CIG program and come summer of next year enable us to be in potentially be in the president's budget for the following year, early 2028, for the annual report on funding recommendations. If that all goes as planned, then we're expecting to find ourselves in a place that we can seek a Small Starts grant agreement in the latter half of 2028 and be up and ready to go into construction in 2029 and ultimately open in 2031.
So you need us to keep this thing from ground calling.
Yes, exactly. There's a business case here.
So that's it. I'm happy to answer your questions if you have.
Okay, great. Sounds really exciting.
So we'll keep your staff informed. Mm-hmm. We're looking to bring this into the board to identify the LPA this summer. Okay. So we've got about 6 months now to convince our partners to come along for the ride, and we'll let you know how that goes.
Great. Okay. Exciting.
Okay, so let's shift gears to microtransit. Zip, Molly.
Yeah. So I lead customer experience and innovation. And one of the things we love to do within this is really think about what are our customers' needs, our community's needs, what are they getting, and what's kind of unmet, what are they missing to help continue the spirit of transit. So, we just talked about how useful and important fixed bus routes are and our BRT system, all of those. And what we've been learning about since 2022, I think, is microtransit, what we call here is ZIP. Be familiar with that?
Not very much, a little bit, but tell me what you're doing.
Yeah, so what it is an on-demand car transport. It will pick you up from where you are and take you to where you need to go within a defined zone. And I'll show you pictures of the zones right there. So we started in Alderwood in 2022 at the CMAC grant of about $1 billion, which really got our feet wet within this. Like, how's this gonna work? We had no idea. I was on that first ride, like, is anyone gonna be out here at 5 a.m.? And boy, did they come. So that kind of launched us into the next three pilot cities, which we're in right now. which is Arlington, Darrington, and Lake Stevens. And you can see the blue.
How big of an area is that that you have there?
Yeah, so the blue area on here is the area.
Is that a couple square miles?
Yeah, like I think
they vary.
Our largest is Lake Stevens, and it's over 10 miles round, but there's a lake in the middle. Darrington's very small, but a little bit skinny, as you can imagine. So we're trying different types of areas and locations and how many people live there to really try to understand
and
what
does
it work everywhere.
Where they need to get to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with it, because it's on demand and on the app, we get really rich, great information and data. We know who's writing, we know where they're going. It can help signal to where could there be other routes if it gets too much volume, because we have all this information of where they're coming and going and need help getting to. And so that data has been really helpful for us to look at.
How do people do it? Is it online ordering?
It's kind of like an Uber.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can use your phone if you're within the area, or you can call. And a lot of, you know, depending on your technology habits, people use the phone as well. Pick up.
I'm curious, you're seeing like seniors go to groceries?
Absolutely.
Kind of medical appointments?
Yep, they go to all those places, which is what a lot what we're hearing for the community. It's giving people independency that they haven't had.
Mm-hmm.
But with that, it's also connecting to transit.
Okay.
So I think we're actually on.
Sorry, is there a time expectancy when you hit the button to when a car might be there?
We used to say 15 minutes when we launched in Alderwood. Try to hit a 15-minute wait. We're still looking at that wait time, but it really depends on demand, right? Just kind of like with anything else, how many cars are there, how many people are trying to access it. But we watch and monitor that every day, so if we're seeing the wait times get too high, then we can shift more cars into a different zone, which allows it to bring it back down. We've had exceptional growth without even really doing a lot of full scale marketing. It really is a word of mouth type of thing that's been getting out and across, because again, if the demand goes too high, people might get frustrated. And we've really been focusing our marketing on people that really need it most. And there has been, in two of our zones, there's a really big increase of youth that are riding.
Are you picking up more than one person with the van? So
yeah, actually, almost half of our trips are
like
shared.
So like Uber on your own, your group. Okay.
Yeah, Uber used to do Uber Pool or something. I can't remember what it was called. But yeah, almost half of our trips are shared with other people.
Mm.
In fact, actually, I just walked over. We have a larger van that's going out this week to test and see if we can get even more people in it for efficiency and test and learn how that works for people. And they are wheelchair accessible. We're also promoting it to people using paratransit as well, so that they can book rides quickly and not have to plan so far ahead, which is our typical DART paratransit experience. One of my favorite stories is in Darrington, there's a 90-year-old lady that takes it everywhere, to medical, to the seniors, center to do activities, and her son-in-law just calls us and is like, this is so great. Like, she's living her life to the fullest, and I'm not driving her around.
Yeah.
She feels independent and doesn't have
that's
to rely
great.
On me. So it's been very nice. I think the numbers might be some on the next slide. So we are actually blowing it away out of what we thought we would do to where we are at now. So last year we ended with 302,000 boardings and about 8,500 actual customers, and you can see by Orca taps we're getting about 25% transferring to a bus, but if you reported in different ways it's even higher than that, because that doesn't take into account things that we can't measure, like the youth, etc.
So is this 24-hour or do you limit it?
No, it's limited. We have like It also depends on the zone. Darrington didn't need it to the span as long, but sometimes it's like 5 a.m. to 10, 11, 12, kind of depends.
So kids can use it, you can use it to go to like a football game or something like that?
Yep,
parents,
and we see a lot
it.
Of that
yeah.
in Lake Stevens and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I would have to say kids using it is great, because then it also, what we're hearing, frees up the family to work or do other things that they haven't been able to do because they've had this priority to help their kids get to where they need to go. So it's been real successful, and we're continuing to learn about it and figure out where and how to expand and what our whole community needs. And really, we're working together with our bus network and figuring out how do we best leverage both of them. How do we help people get to, because the bus can take you much farther, right, than a little micro transit zone. So if you want to go here, great.
How much does it cost for people?
Same as the bus.
Same as the bus.
Yep.
Kids free.
Yep.
They're seniors. Senior discounts.
And it's interesting. One of my favorite stories is one of our board members from Lake Stevens last year was telling us that, you know, he was going around to the senior centers and he's hearing from seniors in Lake Stevens that they all now know not to try to book a car between like 2:30 and 3:30 because the kids are getting out of school, and so they're working around each other. They're also savvy about how the product works that they're adapting, right? It's really cool.
So it's been a great experiment. We're learning more and keep going.
We're doing all this with local dollars, and you know, we don't have an ask in this space. There has been some, I would say, casual conversation with Congressman Larson about how this could get treated in the authorization process, and whether it should be made eligible for formula funding or operating.
Is any other cities doing this? Anybody else doing this, Nashua?
Yeah,
King County's doing it. They have a slightly different model. Pierce Transit's doing it. Mm-hmm. And there's pockets around the state.
And around the country.
Yeah. Huh. And it's everybody loves it, but it's also, there's equal parts art and science to it. You know, if you can't let it grow too big too fast, because it'll begin to eat your operating budget. And so you got to really sort of keep that zone tight and manage the demand. To keep it financially sustainable. So the state is talking about, you know, the next swing they take in a funding package about whether they want to offer some operating incentives to support this as well. So it's becoming popular enough and well enough known that policymakers are starting to talk about, should we incentivize this? Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Awesome. That's all I have.
And every city in Snohomish County that doesn't have it
wants it.
Yes.
Very popular.
So we created a little bit of a monster. And
yeah.
That's kind of our challenge.
It's a good problem.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
Good problem
it
to
is.
Have.
Who doesn't have it but wants it?
Marysville, Mukilteo, Edmonds, Monroe,
Snohomish.
Mount Lake Terrace. Mount Lake Terrace is interesting because they have a light rail station. And they have a hide and ride problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, light rail riders are now overflowing into the city campus, and we have a board member from Mount Lake Terrace who
thinks this would be great.
Okay. Is letting us know.
That's part of the reason we started in Alderwood as well, was to help people we knew by looking at license plates that they were traveling very short distances.
Yeah.
So if we could help them get to the train or connect to something, then that would be beneficial.
A lot of people are using it to get to and from light rail.
Interesting.
Okay, safety and security is next. It's probably the number one issue we hear about from our employees and our customers, and Roland is our chief operating officer, and he's overseeing, talk about big swings. We made a decision about 3 years ago to stand up our own transit security unit, because Snohomish County Sheriff couldn't provide enough officers to our police unit, and we didn't want to just rely on contracted security with an observe and report approach. So. Roland, you want to take it away?
Yeah, I'll just briefly touch on three things. As this behavior migrated onto our system out of the community after the pandemic, we really, first step we had to do was define what acceptable behavior was. So we've adopted rules of conduct policy. Our board just recently updated that last year for the first time. And so
for riders?
For riders, exactly. So that defines what acceptable conduct is on the bus, and that's what we enforce to. In terms of our security.
So give me an example.
Everything from really basic things like keep your feet off the seats,
no smoking,
no drugs, pay your fare, no fighting, you know, it really covers the full range. And so that defining what the baseline is was the first step. Then I'll talk about how we're staffing it and then also some infrastructure pieces. So on the staffing side, you met Jay and Teague downstairs. They're two of our TSOs, and just example of, you know, what we're doing in terms of this homegrown force that really is becoming a, in many ways, kind of a best practice model throughout much of the industry. We, as Rick said, we looked at private contracting. We looked at leaning on the our contract with Snohomish County Sheriffs, and we decided the best solution for us was to develop an in-house force that we could define the training, we could control the quality, ensure that we're really getting particularly folks that have both the security skill set but really the people skill set. Mm-hmm. And there's so much of what we do that it's focused on de-escalation and on really effective communication out there.
Can I send you to Minnesota?
Yes. Believe me, we've talked about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've been out in the field for, I think, just a bit over 2 years now, and really making an impact. We have an 8-week training course where they come in, we hire them, they have four weeks in the classroom, then 4 weeks out on the system learning what this is like out in the field. They travel in pairs. We have an extremely robust training program that's everything from the de-escalation techniques, effective communication. We have a course called Verbal Judo where they're trying to, you know, figure out how best to engage with just the wide diversity of customers that we have, and then all the things you would expect in terms of tactics, self-defense, etc. They travel in pairs, they travel in vehicles. We try to get them out onto the system riding as much as possible.
Do they carry weapons?
So they carry handcuffs and they carry the pepper foam. But other than that, they're not armed. And so they really rely on trying to de-escalate, and that they are authorized to use force in self-defense or to engage
and
break up a fight, et cetera. Yeah, so they're highly trained in that. We currently are at 24 TSOs out in the field. We're right now budgeted to grow to 48 this year, and our goal is to get to that number so that we can then implement our third shift. We currently have a day shift and a swing shift, and we're able to cover most of the SWIFT service throughout the day, and we operate from about 5 a.m. to about 11 p.m. We want to implement a graveyard shift so we have that overnight presence. We've got facilities crews that are out overnight even when service isn't running. We're 24/7 in our maintenance operations, and especially when we take on the last of the service transition from our contractor with some of the Sound Transit service, we're operating well past 2 in the morning. So we really need that 24-hour presence out in the field. And they're connected with a security operations center just across the street where they are dispatched. We know their location, and we have camera systems as well that are monitoring locations in the field and also here around our operating facilities. So it's been very successful. We are currently, in recent months, we're addressing about 1,000 issues a month. We're not fully staffed. We're about half where we want to be. But even with that 50% staffing level, we're doing about 1,000 issues a month.
What do you mean by
it? So they're about 80% of those are what we call proactive, where they're on patrol, they see something, they take care of it. And then about 20% of them are reactive, where they get a call from either a customer or from a supervisor or other staff member that's out in the field. The majority of the issues that we're addressing right now, they're drug and alcohol issues, they're lawyering, and then they're welfare checks. Mm-hmm. And then there's a small section of other things that we're addressing out there, but those three categories are the biggest things that we're addressing. Really positive reaction from our coach operators in terms of higher sense of that physical presence in the field that's backing them up, that's uniform, that's deterring a lot of bad behavior, and our response times are continuing to drop as we get more of them deployed in the field and we're able to respond in a timely way to the incidents. So really successful, and we're just trying to find more good people right now and get to that number 48.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The final thing in terms of infrastructure, we are also underway with what we call a coach operator barrier door project. Many agencies around the country have implemented this physical door that provides some separation between the driver and the vehicle in the front. So it's not a complete compartment you're creating, but it is a substantial metal barrier door with a plexiglass window that allows
some
protection.
Of them now?
We have 4 buses that have been equipped in a pilot mode for several years, and that helped to inform the product that we are acquiring. We got a lot of feedback from operators surveying them and understanding what they appreciate about it, what features they want in the final product. Mm-hmm. And we're expecting that next month we will have the prototype installed from the vendor we selected, and then we'll move into production. And it'll take us about 18 months to equip the entire fleet, about 3,000 vehicles. So a lot of people looking forward to that.
We selected a Canadian vendor right around the time tariffs were flowing up. So maybe you could tell the senator a little bit about the sourcing issues.
Yeah. So they've been, so far the schedule has been slipping. We were supposed to be installed with our pilot last fall. That then slipped to early this year, January, February. Now we're assured that March is going to be the real date when we see the prototype, that it's been
so
there.
So are they reluctant to work with you, or are they worried about tariffs? What are they?
The vendor is very excited to work with us. They want to get into the U.S. market. It's been their supply chain has been challenged by a lot of the trade issues that have come with the tariffs and the changes around.
I think this was our first major procurement after last January 20th. And the tariff thing started bubbling up, and we couldn't really tell where the ball was going to bounce. So it was the first action item the board took to approve a procurement, and they added at our request a 25% tariff contingency, because the tariff was 50, then it was 25, yeah. Then it was 15, then it bounced back up. And, anyway, so there's just been a lot of uncertainty. The other aspect I think that's important about this is that we engaged our employees very much in the planning and design process, and the international ATU took an interest in it, and so now there's some organized labor interest in this particular product because it's seen as superior to what's available with the OEMs. So you might catch a whiff of that.
Yeah,
interesting. National interest. So
it's about a $3.5 million project total to equip all three buses.
Well, it's important that the TSOs are part of a layered approach to security. We have a social worker under contract with Snohomish County. We have ambassadors out in the field, supervisors. We also have the contract with the Snohomish County Sheriff's Department for those cases that require law enforcement response. So it really is them all working together that gives us that flexibility.
Yeah, they've all got their lane that they travel in.
That's who you see in the paperwork.
Yep, they're all together.
So bus driver on the right, service ambassador, social
worker.
What is
a service ambassador?
Molly?
Service ambassadors are on the buses riding all the time, answering questions, helping customers, as well as checking fare on the BRT.
Are they paid employees of yours?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're represented by the team.
Yeah.
And then social workers in the blue.
Same thing, they're your employees?
They are county, Snohomish County Public Health. We contract with the county.
They're closely aligned with the Snohomish County Sheriffs that we are contracted with as well. Taking care of issues out on the looking to refer people to services, and it's that personal touch trying to connect with them.
And then the red coats are service or supervisors, so they're the ones out in the field directing traffic and making the buses go on time and making sure everybody's safe and where they need to be from a route driving standpoint. And then TSOs in the yellow, and then our deputy on the left from Snohomish County Sheriff. So there's a lot of personnel out there trying to make sure everybody's safe.
Yeah.
We just have a couple minutes.
Yeah, so last but not least, really, there's not a lot to report. I just, 2024 was a huge year. Linwood Link opened, and we shifted our entire network. That's a picture of Linwood Station.
Yep.
So we've probably got a bus pulling through that oval now about every 45 seconds or so.
Oh, really?
If you were a real transit geek and you wanted to just be wow, show up there at like 6 in the morning and watch what happens, it's really
amazing.
You don't
amazing. Do
that. Christopher does that. Yeah. But it's going really well. We've had double-digit ridership growth year over year the last 2 years since Light Rail opened. Orange Line is just killing it. And that segment between Linwood Station and Edmonds College in particular is performing really well. So the theory, the vision worked. And so looking forward, we're continuing to work with Sound Transit on every link extension.
Yeah.
the Alderwood Mall Station, and then on up the line, Ashway, Mariner, eventually come to Field in Everett. So, you know, this local transit network is a big piece of how riders are going to get to Everett Link in the future. The Gold Line is how all the North County residents are going to get to light rail in the future. So it's coming together bit by bit, and you know, so far so good. So
awesome, and working pretty sweet. Just what, a week and a half ago?
Oh, yeah. here's the parade
for the big parade.
Where's that at?
That picture is at Lynwood, right?
Or, that's a line of people waiting, trying to get their
TVs. Oh, to get on to go downtown.
Yeah,
yeah.
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 And at the ride store, which is right in the back on the left, there's 800, just in the little.
Wow.
Normal daily is like 40.
I'm so sorry, I missed it.
It's a pretty nice day.
It was
day.
Pretty amazing. Yeah. And really something. So.
Yeah.
Cool. Anyway, that's what we got for you today.
Well, thank you, everybody. Really appreciate all of the great people working on this. And I just think back 25 years ago and how much better it is for families and communities and small businesses, and all because of the work and vision all of you have. So I'm happy to be a part of it.
Yeah.
I keep fighting for that SIG money.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we couldn't do it without you.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's been said many times, but the partnership is the key to the whole thing.
Have a vision. Go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good. Well, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks for coming to see us. And, and I don't know if it was said or if it transpired between you two, but you're the first U.S. senator ever to visit community transit.
Really?
At our offices.
Well, okay.
You've been to our groundbreaking.
And you've helped us break ground on 3 BRT projects.
Yeah.
So the Gold Line will be the 4th.
Yeah.
But,
coming to the house.
Yeah,
it's
but coming,
so special.
Coming here.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Very special.
Thank you.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
If the Herald has any questions.
Oh, yes. Any questions?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
I forgot you were there.
just one, I guess. I know that federally, you know, there's been a lot of situations where there's been like pauses or delays to federal funding for transit projects. We've seen it in New York, New Jersey, places like that. What sort of steps will you hope to take in order to make sure that funding for projects like the Gold Line is, you know, secure and in place and won't get halted, or as much as you can, like, won't get halted by sort of like federal actions from up top?
Well, good question, because that's exactly what we have seen from this administration. The first budget that they put out cut the House Republicans cut SIG by 98% or something. It was just like pretending that nobody ever needed transit ever anywhere in the country. So as the vice chair of the Appropriations Committee, the first thing I did when we were writing our transportation budget was said, this is a priority. I've seen it work. I've watched it grow here. I've seen it in other parts of the country. And I know how much people rely on it. So fighting to make sure we keep those really essential programs and grants within the budget, and we don't become the highway-only transportation system, but we really look at all the parts of it. And as far as the grants and those kinds of things, the administration it has been relentless in cutting things. What we did in writing the THUD bill this year, which is the transportation bill, is put in new parameters that really don't allow the president to move around funding the way he did in the last. Is it everything I wanted? Absolutely not. But we, for the first time in my tenure as appropriations member, we have put in some pretty serious oversight. So the president's team can't just move money wherever they want to or deny funding based on they didn't like the mayor or whatever. Mm. Will this president follow that? I'm going to tell you, to be honest, we have watched him not follow the law a lot. Mm. But our job is oversight, and if he tries to do that again, then we will write in stricter language in the next bill. And we leave people a place to go, and that's called the courts. Mm. He signed the bill. It's law.
And my other question is, have you ever ridden a community transit bus?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Of course.
Yeah,
not when I was growing up, because we didn't have it, but boy, we have it now.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you did. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody.